What we're going to do this morning is we're going to see this man who was indeed born blind. Jesus heals him. He receives his sight. However, through this, we also see that not only does he get his physical vision, but his spiritual vision is made clear as well throughout this story. And so you'll see in this account of this man who was born blind. So let's first talk about this man who was born blind. John chapter 9, starting at verse 1, it says, "Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, Go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Therefore the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, Is this not the one who sat and begged? Some said, This is he. Others said, He is like him. He said, I am he. Therefore they said to him, How are your eyes open? He answered and said, A man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said, Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received my sight. So they said to him, Where is he? And he said, I do not know. What we see at the very beginning is that this blind man, when he has this encounter with Jesus, the only thing that he really knows about him or seems to understand about him is he's a man called Jesus. So he had understood, and enough had been revealed to him that he knew Jesus' name, that this man named Jesus came to him and told him that if he would go and wash this clay off of his eyes, he could receive his sight. And that's the thing that he did. But when you first encounter this blind man, you see that he was indeed born blind, that he had never had eyesight at all. What's interesting about the account, and you'll see that Jesus gets in trouble because of this, or people accuse him because of this, is that this is going to be upon the Sabbath day. And on this Sabbath day, Jesus had made clay. Some of the commentators will say that that was the reason why the Sabbath day was such a sticking point for them at this time, because one of the 39 laws that they kept about the Sabbath day was there was to be no kneading of anything, like you would knead dough. And so him making this clay, which John points out several different times, is one of the things they probably got upset about. The other being that a work, that healing had been done on the Sabbath day. But what is clear about this as well is that this man didn't ask this of Jesus. That he was there, Jesus saw him. And the question is asked, who was it who sinned, this man or his parents? And so this man, his entire life had been treated like an object of conversation, but no one had actually been able to do anything for him. This man had been sitting and begging for things throughout his life, as others revealed about him. However, on this occasion, he didn't really ask Jesus of anything because Jesus saw him. And so when we think about how it is that our faith sometimes happens, it does come about by understanding about this man named Jesus. And as it says in Titus 2 and verse 11, the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men. It's not necessarily something that you've asked for. It's not something that you were seeking. You've been asking and begging in a lot of different places for a lot of different things. But this man named Jesus had appeared on the scene at one time and offered grace to all of mankind. And that may be all that you know at this particular point in your life. But just as it is with this blind man, it has appeared to everyone and it's made available. The question I want you to think about this morning is this. If you were born blind, if you did not have your eyesight, and someone came and offered you sight, would you take it? Because I think for most of us, the obvious answer would be, well, of course I would. What Jesus is offering you is not physical sight so much as it is spiritual sight. Will you still take it? That's the point of this entire chapter. And so Jesus does indeed heal this man by telling him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam and to come back. And he does come back seeing at this particular time. This is not something where the man himself, the power was in himself to do this thing. He simply went and obeyed. And just as it is when we talk about the grace of God, in Ephesians 2, 8 and 9, it tells us that we've been saved by grace through faith, that it's not of ourselves, it is the work of God, so that none of us should boast. It's not anything that we can say that we did this thing ourselves. This man didn't ask for it. It was given to him. It was a gift. But he had to do the thing that Jesus told him to do. So he went away obeying, and he came back with his sight. Did this man heal himself? Obviously not. Was the power in the mud or the water that he washed with? Obviously not. However, he came back seeing because he obeyed that what was given to him. So one of the things you may understand about Jesus this morning is that he's a man who said he came to give grace. And this is the way by which he has said that he would give that grace to you. It is a gift from him that if you will wash, you can be cleansed and you can have that salvation. That's no different than what we see here in this story. One of the things that's interesting to me too, and that commentators have varied opinions on, is why it was that Jesus chose to do the miracle this way. Because on other occasions, Jesus would just speak the word and people would receive their health back, their life back. Then on other occasions, he would heal a leper by touching them. But on this occasion, he does something a lot different in that he makes this clay. He takes his spit and makes the clay. Some commentators believe that there's a connection between the dirt that he used to make the clay and the idea of Genesis 2, that from the dust of the ground, God created all of mankind. And it is interesting that this man had never seen before, and this is, in a sense, a creation event, and that he had created vision within this particular man. What was also interesting is that many of them draw a very strong connection between the spit and the idea of life-giving spirit, which I cannot understand that connection. However, that was something that Jesus actually used. My opinion is this, because I don't know, this text just simply doesn't tell us. My opinion is this, that this man does not see Jesus again, or does not see Jesus at all until the end of the story. However, there is no one in John 9 who sees Jesus more clearly than this man who is blind. And so it's interesting to me that he is going to go through this entire encounter, never having laid his physical eyes upon Jesus, only doing what Jesus told him to do, and he arrives at a point of faith that no one else arrives at. That, to me, is a very interesting thing about this encounter. In the next several verses, starting at verse 13, it says, "So they brought him who was formerly blind to the Pharisees." And John points out in verse 14 that it was the Sabbath when Jesus made clay. He points that out once again and opened his eyes. And so the Pharisees asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, "He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath." Others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. Then they said to the blind man again, "What do you say about him, because he opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." And so this man has now come to a point where not only is Jesus someone who is a man, but he's had a little bit of time to evaluate what has happened. And now he's being cross-examined, and he hears this division that's occurring between many about this Jesus and who he is and how can he be someone who is right with God because he did this thing on the Sabbath day. Yeah, but how can someone do these things unless God is with him? He hears these types of arguments and he concludes there must be something about this Sabbath day that they've got wrong. This man has to be someone sent from God. He's a prophet. When we start to hear all the religious division about who Jesus is, and we start to see the very plain truth about Jesus is, who Jesus is, it helps us to understand that God is indeed with him. How could a man have done the things that Jesus did? Because it's not just people who were believers, gullible believers, who have testified about these things. Others did as well. And there's all kind of historical documentation that proves a lot of these types of things outside of the scriptures. How can someone who is just a man have done those things? So he arrives at this idea that he is a prophet. The Jews, though, were blinded because of this Sabbath day. And as Paul said about them, that they are very, very zealous for God. But their zealousness was something that had blinded them to the truth. They didn't understand the righteousness of God. And so they sought to establish their own righteousness. And so when it came to these Sabbath rules, these 39 different laws, as many put them, that they had in relationship to the Sabbath day and how to keep the Sabbath day properly, Jesus didn't exist within those confines. That was not what God had delivered. God didn't deliver all those traditions. He didn't deliver all those stipulations. He didn't deliver all those restrictions that they had. Jesus went about doing good. There were some that when Jesus would heal on the Sabbath day, that the supervisor of the synagogue would say to the people, look, there's six other days in which you can come to be healed. Be healed on those days, not understanding that you're saying, if you have these things and need to be healed on some other day other than the Sabbath day. He didn't understand that the point of this was that Jesus was the Christ, that he was at least a prophet, someone sent from God at that point, because of the Sabbath day and what he wanted and what he understood and his own opinion about what the Sabbath day was supposed to mean. In Proverbs 28 and verse 9, it says that one who turns his ear away from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination. And so as this discussion continues to take place between the different groups in the presence of this blind man and amongst themselves about who Jesus is, notice this progression and some of the things that they come about. So he says that he believes that this person is a prophet that received his sight. So in verse 18 of John 9, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight, and then until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know this is our son and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Who opened his eyes, we do not know. He's of age, ask him. He'll speak for himself. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, he is of age, ask him. So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered and said, whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. Then they said to him again, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become one of his disciples? Then they reviled him and said, you are his disciples, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he's from. The man answered and said to him, why, this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered and said to him, you are completely born in sins, and you are teaching us? And they cast him out. This question at the very beginning, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Pharisees have an answer. You were completely born in sin because you believe in this man, and this man who does not hold to the way in which we believe the Sabbath ought to be kept. Even his own parents are not going to stand up for him because they're fearful of these Jews who are going to cast them out of the synagogue if they confess what is obvious to everyone. No one in this narrative sees Jesus more clearly than this blind man. Even from the very beginning when he saw that this man named Jesus tells me to do something and I did it and I was healed, they didn't see Jesus as a man. They saw Jesus the same way that they saw the blind man. He was an object of discussion. He was someone to consider to make their own arguments and to make their own narratives. But this man knew that Jesus was a man who told him to do something. And he did it, and he received his sight. Therefore, God has to be with him. It doesn't matter if the Jews say that he's a sinner. I don't know if he's a sinner, the man says, but I do know this. This one thing I know, I was blind, and now I see. I did the thing that he told me to do, and I received the thing that he said I would receive. God has to be with him. Well, you're a sinner, and he's a sinner. We know all these things. We don't know where he's from. That's a marvelous thing that you don't know that. Can you not see who this man is? He's a prophet, at the very least. Who is teaching who now? This blind man, because of his blindness, would not have been allowed in the synagogues and in the temple. And so any teaching that he would have received would have been in the peripheral. And the passing by, and those who may have taken some time to speak to him about some of the things of God. But other than that, he had received no instruction. These Pharisees obviously probably had never sat down and spoken with this man. But who is teaching who now? These Pharisees who appear to be very righteous people. You remember how it talks about their phylacteries and their garments and the prayers and all the things that could be seen with the eye and how righteous they would seem. And yet this blind man says, you know, it is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from. We know, not you know, we know. We know God does not hear the prayer of sinners. God did say that. Even the prayers of a righteous man, one who turns away his ear from hearing the law, that person's prayer is an abomination to the Lord. But the Lord will hear the prayers of a righteous man. If someone is a worshiper of God, he hears him. And so at the very end of this narrative, in John chapter 9, this man is cast out at the end of verse 34. And says that Jesus heard in verse 35 that they had cast him out. And when Jesus had found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." Then he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into the world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind." He says, "Lord, I believe." And it's interesting. It's sad in a lot of ways that this blind man is now sitting on the peripheral once again, that he has been cast out because he simply admitted something that ought to be evident to everyone. When Jesus appears back on the scene, and he sees the kinds of things that have happened to that man, he asks him if you believe. And he confesses, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped Jesus. So this man went from a position where he just understood nothing else about Jesus, that simply that he was a man with this name that made this promise, and he fulfilled the promise. He listened to the arguments that were made, and not from his emotion and not from physical eyesight, but as it's supposed to be, from his heart, he considered these things. And he understood who this Jesus was, at the very least a prophet. And at the end, he knew that this prophet was not going to steer him wrong. Who is he? "I'm standing right before you." How many times had Jesus said, "I am the one that you've been looking for. I am the Christ. Tell us plainly who you are." He did, over and over and over again. And you wouldn't believe. Even this man says, "Why do you keep asking me about this thing? Do you want to be his disciple?" I love sarcasm. And that's what he uses there. And he tells you want to be his disciple also? His own parents forsake him. They tell this man, "Give God glory." That's reminiscent of Joshua chapter 7, where Achan is told to give God glory, or glorify God, and confess that you've taken these things. In other words, God is bearing witness to this thing. Here's the things that glorify God. The things that glorify God is this: having courage when everyone else forsakes you, even your family. This is what glorifies God, to examine the evidence that is presented. And don't use physical eyesight and your emotions and those things of your own intellect, but see what is there, what's been clearly revealed to us, and draw the conclusion. That glorifies God. This glorifies God. When you see the thing that is very plainly right in front of you, believe and have faith and confidence in that. Those are the things that glorify God. It's reminiscent also in Psalm 27 and verse 10, where it says that when my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take care of me. This man had been begging his whole life. And now even his parents have turned their backs on him. But Jesus heard what happened, and Jesus came. That's the confidence we have. And that's the importance of this account. Proverbs 26 and verse 12 tells us, "Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him." Because then some of the Pharisees in verse 40 who were with him heard these words, and they said, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We see,' therefore your sin remains." If they could just say, "I don't know, I don't understand." If they could simply go back to where this man started. This man named Jesus, he has said these things and then he's done them. Make the connections. In the Old Testament, it said that if a man said certain things were going to happen and they didn't happen, they would be a false prophet. But when they prophesied about things that were going to happen and they came to pass, and that person had God with him. And God doesn't hear the prayer of sinners. We know that. And so God obviously has to be with this man. So at the very least, he's a prophet. But who does he say he is? He says he's the Son of God. A prophet's not going to say that. The Son of God will. It's a pretty easy way to draw that conclusion. However, when a person is wise in his own eyes, he doesn't want to hear the truth. There's more hope for a fool than for him. So what are some of the lessons we can draw? One of them is that there is a lot of danger in being spiritually blinded. One is that you're not qualified to lead other people. Jesus said that if the blind lead the blind, they're both going to end up in the ditch. That's an obvious statement. And when people cannot see what's in front of them, they are not worthy of us following them. Plain and simple. That if a person's in the infancy of their faith, they're just not at the point right now where they're qualified to be a leader of people. They have to mature. They have to grow. So in the scriptures, it tells us things like in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 22, don't lay hands on anyone hastily. This is that idea of approving in the context of someone who's going to be in that position as an elder. Don't give your approval. Don't lay hands on anyone hastily. Don't participate in other people's sins. Keep yourself pure. Be very careful about who it is that you follow and who it is that you listen to. That people who are only interested in their own agendas and their own ways of looking at things, they cannot just simply admit, I don't know what it is. This is the only thing that I do know, and I have to base everything upon that right now. Be careful with that. Because if you're being led by someone who is blind, you're both going to fall into the ditch. Proverbs 18, verse 2 in the ESV says, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. And so as it was with the scribes and the Pharisees and the others during that time, they only wanted to express their opinion about the Sabbath day. Yes, the Sabbath day was holy. The Sabbath day, God told us what work wasn't to be done. My opinion on that is this. You can't make clay on the Sabbath day. That violates God's law. But they miss things like, yes, but if your animal falls in the ditch on the Sabbath day, you'll go out there and get it. They couldn't answer questions when Jesus would want to heal someone on the Sabbath day. Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath day? Or to do evil on the Sabbath day since you want to kill me? You say you can do that on the Sabbath day. What about doing good on the Sabbath day? How about somebody who has power over the Sabbath day, such as God, who is always working? I must work the works of him who sent me while it is the day. The night is coming when no one should work. We'll be able to work. What about that? A fool is not interested in understanding. A fool is only interested in expressing his own opinion about things. And this idea of expressing his own opinion is not the idea, no, let me tell you. This is the idea, let me tell you so that you may do what I'm telling you to do. The Bible describes that person as being foolish. And that's not who we're supposed to be. Jesus came to change us. This blind man, when he came back seeing, you notice how the people reacted to him? Wait, is this the man who was born blind? Yeah, that's him. He looks like him. But he's able to see now. And this blind man, really, what he says is, I am. Not, I am he. What he really says is, I am. The same kind of language that Jesus uses. Nothing about me has really changed. I'm still the same person. Except now I'm able to see. There's a very important lesson that's there. We are the same person without our sins. But we have become so changed. Because as it was with Paul, Paul was a man who was dedicated to whatever it was that God told him to do. He was going to do that thing. But Paul's life became so changed afterward that he wasn't even recognizable. When God changes you, you are still the same person minus your sins. But because of that love and that dedication, that faith that you have in Christ, it changes all your actions. But that dedication and that honesty that continues to grow, that humility that was there, that still remains. God does not change you inwardly. You have to allow yourself to be changed inwardly. And that's the thing that makes you change outwardly, to where people say, is this him? Is this really that same person? I am the same person that I was. In Luke 4, verses 18 through 21, think about what those verses said that we read at the beginning. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he's anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. Poor. You still poor? People who look outwardly at you are going to still say, yeah, you're still poor. Nothing's changed concerning that. But you see the change that's taking place? There's no one more rich than you are. He talks about preaching the gospel to the poor, to those who, and to heal those who are brokenhearted. To others it may still appear that you're brokenhearted. To proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind. All of these things outwardly people may still see in you. And you have to tell them, I am still that same person, minus a lot. I'm no longer blind. I'm no longer poor. I'm no longer captive. I am set free. It's interesting that, you know, the Sabbath day was one of those days that it wasn't just because a person was supposed to rest upon the Sabbath day. That wasn't the point of it. The point was to understand that the rest that God gives, the deliverance that God was giving to his people, that God was going to give an eternal rest to his people. That was the point of the Sabbath day. And so they were saying that the Sabbath day is the worst day to be setting people captive, who are captive, free from their oppression. The worst day? Sabbath day was the best day to do that. And we changed what it was that Jesus was actually sent to do. And so recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Then he closed the book, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. And at the end he says, today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. And the reason being is because Jesus is indeed that true light. There are a lot of things that can lead us. There's a lot of things that may seem like light. But in John 1, starting at verse 6, it says this, that there was a man who was sent from God, whose name was John. This man came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right. That means the authority. That means the power to become children of God to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. And so in John 1, verses 6 through 13, we see that Jesus is indeed that true light that God gave. This light has appeared to everyone. This morning it may be that the only thing that you know about Jesus is that there was this man named Jesus that we've been talking about. And this morning you heard that there were some promises that he made, and these promises were fulfilled. Draw that connection. He's at least somebody that God is with. And this prophet, God would not be with him, would not hear his prayers, would not answer if he was unfaithful. But he did answer. And this Jesus said of himself that he's the Son of God. And so the question I asked you before is the one I'm going to leave you with. If you were blind and offered sight, would you take it? This man allowed somebody to spit on the ground, make mud, put it on his eyes, and then tell him to go wash it. That's icky. Naaman was told to go wash in the Jordan. And he said, that filthy Jordan? But we know in both of these accounts, they both received what it was that they were promised. This morning, it may not be that you understand what the importance of baptism is about. If that's the case, let's study that. It may be that you're in a very infancy stage of understanding who Jesus is. If that's the case, let us help. If you're blind this morning, you're being offered sight. Will you take it? As together we stand and sing, won't you please come if we can help?